Chapter 36. Solution of the arguments produced on the part of the things made. In like manner again, neither is there, on the part of creatures, anything to induce us to assert their eternity, for the necessity of being that we find in creatures, from which the first argument is taken, is a necessity of order, as was shown above, and a necessity of order does not compel the subject of a like necessity to have been always, as we proved above. For although the substance of heaven, through being devoid of potentiality to non-being, has a potentiality to being, yet this necessity follows its substance. Wherefore its substance once brought into being, this necessity involves the impossibility of not being, but it does not make it impossible for the heaven not to be, from the point of view where we consider the production of its very substance. Likewise the power to be always, from which the second argument proceeded, presupposes the production of the substance. Hence where the production of the heaven's substance is in question, this power cannot be a sufficient argument for that substance's eternity. Again, the argument adduced in sequence does not compel us to admit the eternity of movement, for it has been made clear, that without any change in God the agent, it is possible for him to do something new that is not eternal, and if it is possible for something to be done by him anew, it is evident that something can also be moved by him anew, since newness of movement is consequent upon the ordinance of the eternal will to the effect that movement be not always. Likewise the intention which natural agents have of perpetuating the species, which was the starting point of the fourth argument, presupposes that natural agents are already in being. Wherefore this argument has no place, save in natural things already brought into being, but not when it is a question of the first production of things. The question as to whether it is necessary to admit that generation will go on forever will be discussed in the sequel. Also the fifth argument, taken from time, supposes rather than proves the eternity of movement. For since before and after and continuity of time are consequent upon before and after and continuity of movement, according to the teaching of Aristotle, it is clear that the same instant is the beginning of the future, and the end of the past, because in movement there is something assignable that is the beginning and end of the various parts of movement. Wherefore it will not be necessary for each instant to be thus, unless every assignable instant that we conceive in time be between before and after in movement, and this is to suppose that movement is eternal. But he who supposes that movement is not eternal, can say that the first instant of time is the beginning of the future, and the end of no past. Nor is it incompatible with the succession of time, if we place therein a now that is a beginning and not an end, because a line in which we place a point that is a beginning and not an end, is stationary and not transitory. Since even in a particular movement which also is not stationary but transitory, it is possible to designate something as only a beginning and not an end of movement, for otherwise all movement would be perpetual, which is impossible. That we suppose the non-being of time to precede its being, if time began, does not compel us to say that time is, if we suppose that it is not, as the sixth argument inferred. For the before that we speak of as being before time was, does not imply any part of time in reality, but only in our imagination, because when we say that time has being after non-being, we mean that there was no part of time before this signate now. Thus, when we say that there is nothing above the heaven, we do not mean that there is a place outside the heaven which can be said to be above in relation to the heaven, but that there is no place above it. In either case the imagination can apply a measure to the already existing thing, and just as this measure is no reason for admitting infinite quantity in a body, as stated in 3 Physics, so neither is it a reason for supposing that time is eternal. The truth of propositions which one has to grant even if one denies them, and from which the seventh argument proceeded, has the necessity of that relation which is between predicate and subject. Wherefore it does not compel a thing to be always, except perhaps as understood by the divine intellect in which all truth is rooted, as we showed in the first book. Hence it is clear that the arguments taken from creatures do not compel one to assert the eternity of the world. Chapter 37. Solution of the arguments taken from the making of things. It remains for us to show that neither does any argument taken from the point of view of the making of things compel us to draw the aforesaid conclusion. The common opinion of the philosophers who asserted that from nothing naught is made, on which the first argument was based, holds good for that particular making which they had under consideration. For since all our knowledge begins from the senses which are about singulars, human speculations proceeded from particular to universal considerations. Wherefore those who sought the principle of things considered only the particular makings of beings, and inquired in what manner this particular fire or this particular stone was made. At first, considering the making of things more from an outward point of view than it behoved them to do, they stated that a thing is made only in respect of certain accidental dispositions, such as rarity, density, and so forth, and they said, in consequence, that to be made was nothing else than to be altered, for the reason that they understood everything to be made from an actual being. Later on, they considered the making of things more inwardly, and made a step forward to the making of things in regard to their substance, for they asserted that a thing does not need to be made, except accidentally, from an actual being, and that it is made per se from a being in potentiality. But this making, which is of a being from any being whatsoever, is the making of a particular being, which is made for as much as it is this being, for instance a man or a fire, but not for as much as it is considered universally, for there was previously a being which is transformed into this being. Entering still more deeply into the origin of things, they considered at last the procession of all created being from one first cause, as appears from the arguments given above, which prove this. In this procession of all being from God, it is not possible for anything to be made from something already existing, since it would not be the making of all created being. The early natural philosophers had no conception of such a making, for it was their common opinion that from nothing naught is made. Or if any of them conceived the idea, they did not consider that the name of making was applicable thereto, since the word making implies movement or change, whereas in this origin of all being from one first being, the transformation of one being into another is inconceivable, as we have proved. For which reason neither does it belong to the natural philosophers to consider this same origin of things, but to the metaphysician, who considers universal being and things that are devoid of movement. We, however, by a kind of metaphor transfer the name making even to that origin, so that we say that anything whatsoever is made, if its essence or nature originates from something else. Wherefore it is clear that neither is the second argument cogent, which was taken from the nature of movement. For creation cannot be described as a change save metaphorically, in so far as the created thing is considered to have being after non-being, in which way one thing is said to be made out of another, even in those things where the one is not changed into the other, for the sole reason that one succeeds the other, as day out of night. Nor does the nature of movement that is brought into the argument justify the conclusion, since what nowise exists is not in any particular state that when it begins to exist, it is in a different state now and before. Hence again it is evident that there is no need for a passive potentiality to precede the existence of all created being, as the third argument inferred. For this is necessary in those things which take their origin of being from movement, since movement is the act of a potential being. But before a created thing was, it was possible for it to be, through the power of the agent, by which power also it began to be, or it was possible on account of the habitude of the terms, in which no incompatibility is found, which kind of possibility is said to be in respect of no potentiality, as the philosopher says, for this predicate being is not incompatible with this subject world or man, as measurable is incompatible with diameter, and thus it follows that it is not impossible for it to be, and consequently that before it was possible for it to be, apart from all potentiality. But in those things which are made by movement, it is necessary that they be previously possible in respect of a passive potentiality, and it is with regard to these that the philosopher employs this argument. From this it is also clear that neither is the fourth argument conclusive for the purpose. For in things made by movement, to be made and to be are not simultaneous, because succession is found in their making, whereas in things that are not made by movement, their making is not before their being. It is therefore evident that nothing prevents our asserting that the world has not been always, and this is affirmed by the Catholic faith: in the beginning God created heaven and earth, and it is said of God before he made anything from the beginning, etc. Chapter 38. Arguments by which some endeavor to prove that the world is not eternal. Now there are some arguments brought forward by certain people to prove that the world was not always. They are taken from the following: for it has been proved that God is the cause of all things, but a cause must precede in duration the things made by its action. Again, since all being is created by God, it cannot be said to be made from some being, so that it must be made from nothing, and consequently has being after non-being. Also, because it is not possible to pass by an infinite number of things. Now if the world were always, an infinite number of things would have now been passed by, since what is passed by. And if the world was always, there is an infinite number of days or an infinite number of solar revolutions. Further, it follows that an addition is made to the infinite, since every day something is added to the past days or revolutions. Moreover, it follows that it is possible to go on to infinity in efficient causes, if there was always generation, and we are bound to admit this latter if the world was always, because the sun's cause is his father, and another man is the latter's father, and so on indefinitely. Again, it will follow that there is an infinite number of things, namely the immortal souls of an infinite number of men. Now since these arguments do not conclude of absolute necessity, although they are not devoid of probability, it is enough merely to touch upon them, lest the Catholic faith seem to be founded on empty reasonings, and not, as it is, on the most solid teaching of God. Wherefore it seems right that we should indicate how those arguments are met by those who asserted the eternity of the world. For the first statement, that an agent necessarily precedes the effect brought about by its operation, is true of those things which act by movement, because the effect is not until the movement is ended, and the agent must necessarily exist even when the movement begins. On the other hand, in those things which act instantaneously, this is not necessary. Thus, as soon as the sun reaches the point of the east, it enlightens our hemisphere. Also, that which is said in the second place is of no avail, for in order to contradict the statement, something is made from something, if this be not granted, we must say something is not made from something, and not, something is made from nothing, except in the sense of the former, whence we cannot conclude that it is made after not being. Again, the third argument is not cogent, for though the infinite in act be impossible, it is not impossible in succession, since any given infinite taken in this sense is finite. Hence each of the preceding revolutions could be passed by, since it was finite. But in all of them together, if the world had been always, there would be no first revolution. Wherefore there would be no passing through them, because this always requires two extremes. Again, the fourth argument put forward is weak, for nothing hinders the infinite receiving an addition on the side on which it is finite. Now supposing time to be eternal, it follows that it is infinite anteriorly but finite posteriorly, since the present is the term of the past. Nor is the argument cogent which is given in the fifth place, for it is impossible, according to philosophers, to have an infinite number of active causes which act together simultaneously, because the effect would have to depend on an infinite number of simultaneous actions. Such are causes that are per se infinite, because their infinity is required for their effect. On the other hand, in causes that do not act simultaneously, this is not impossible, according to those who assert that generation has always been. And this infinity is accidental to the causes, for it is accidental to the father of Socrates that he is another man's son or not, whereas it is not accidental to the stick for as much as it moves the stone, that it be moved by the hand, since it moves for as much as it is moved. The objection taken from souls is more difficult, and yet the argument is not of much use, since it takes many things for granted. Some of those who maintain the eternity of the world asserted that human souls do not survive the body. Some said that of all souls there survives only the separate intellect, or the active intellect according to some, or even the passive intellect according to others. Some have held a kind of rotation in souls, saying that the same souls after several centuries return to bodies. And some do not consider it incongruous that there should be things actually infinite in those which have no order. Nevertheless, one may proceed to prove this more efficiently from the end of the divine will, as we have indicated above. For the end of God's will in the production of things, is his goodness as manifested in his effects. Now God's might and goodness are especially made manifest in that things other than himself were not always. For the fact that they have not always been clearly shows that other things beside himself have their being from him. It also shows that he does not act by a necessity of his nature, and that his power is infinite in acting. Therefore it was most becoming to the goodness of God that he should give his creatures a beginning of their duration. From what has been said, we are able to avoid the various errors of the pagan philosophers, some of whom asserted the eternity of the world, others asserted that the matter of the world is eternal, out of which at a certain time the world began to be formed, either by chance, or by some intellect, or else by attraction and repulsion. For all these suppose something eternal beside God, which is incompatible with the Catholic faith. Chapter 39. That the distinction of things is not from chance. Having disposed of those matters which relate to the production of things, it remains for us to treat of those which call for our consideration as regards the distinction of things. Of these, the first that we have to prove is that the distinction of things is not from chance. For chance occurs only in those things which it is possible to be otherwise, since we do not ascribe to chance those that are necessarily and always. Now it was shown above, that certain things have been created in whose nature there is no possibility of not being, such as immaterial substances and those which are not composed of contraries. Wherefore it is impossible that their substances be from chance. But it is by their substances that they are mutually distinct. Therefore their distinction is not from chance. Moreover, since chance is only in those things that are possibly otherwise, and since the principle of this possibility is matter and not their form, which in fact determines the possibility of matter to one, it follows that those things which are distinct by their forms are not distinct by chance, but perhaps those things are, whose distinction is from matter. But the distinction of species is from the form, and the distinction of singulars in the same species is from matter. Wherefore the specific distinction of things cannot be from chance, but perhaps chance causes the distinction of certain individuals. Also, since matter is the principle and cause of casual things, as we have shown, there may be chance in the making of things produced from matter. But it was proved above, that the first production of things into being was not from matter. Wherefore there is no place for chance in them. Yet the first production of things must needs have included their distinction, since there are many created things which are neither produced from one another, nor from something common, because they do not agree in matter. Therefore it is impossible for the distinction of things to be from chance. Again, a per se cause is before an accidental cause. Hence if later things are from a determinate per se cause, it is unfitting to say that the first things are from an undeterminate accidental cause. Now the distinction of things naturally precedes their movements and operations, since determinate movements and operations belong to things determinate and distinct. But movements and operations of things are from per se and determinate causes, since we find that they proceed from their causes in the same way either always or for the most part. Therefore the distinction of things is also from a per se determinate cause, and not from chance, which is an indeterminate accidental cause. Moreover, the form of anything that proceeds from an intellectual voluntary agent is intended by the agent. Now the universe of creatures has for its author God, who is an agent by his will and intellect, as proved above. Nor can there be any defect in his power, so that he fail of his intention, since his power is infinite, as was proved above. It follows therefore that the form of the universe is intended and willed by God. Therefore it is not from chance, for we ascribe to chance those things which are beside the intention of the agent. Now the form of the universe consists in the distinction and order of its parts. Therefore the distinction of things is not from chance. Further, that which is good and best in the effect is the end of its production. But the good and the best in the universe consists in the mutual order of its parts, which is impossible without distinction, since by this order the universe is established as one whole, and this is its best. Therefore the order of the parts of the universe and their distinction is the end of the production of the universe. Therefore the distinction of things is not from chance. Holy Writ bears witness to this truth, as is clear from Genesis I, 1, whereafter the words, "In the beginning God created heaven and earth," the text continues verse 4, "God divided the light from the darkness," and so on, so that not only the creation of things, but also their distinction is shown to be from God, and not from chance, but has the good and the best of the universe. Wherefore it is added verse 31, God saw all the things that he had made, and they were very good. Hereby is excluded the opinion of the ancient natural philosophers who affirmed that there was only a material cause, and no other, from which all things were made by expansion and cohesion. For these are compelled to say that the distinction of things which we observe in the universe resulted, not from the intentional ordinance of one, but from the chance movement of matter. Likewise is excluded the opinion of Democritus and Leucippus, postulated an infinite number of material principles, namely indivisible bodies of the same nature, but differing in shape, order, and position, to whose convergence which must needs be fortuitous, since they denied the existence of an active cause. They ascribed the diversity among things, on account of the three aforesaid differences of atoms, to wit, of shape, order, and position. Wherefore it followed that the distinction of things was by chance, and from what has been said this is clearly false. Chapter 40. That matter is not the first cause of the distinction of things. Furthermore, it is evident from the foregoing that the distinction of things is not on account of a diversity of matter as its first cause, for nothing determinate can proceed from matter except by chance, because matter is in potentiality to many things, of which if only one were to result, it must needs be that this happens in the minority of cases, and such is that which happens by chance, especially if we remove the intention of an agent. Now it was proved that the distinction of things is not from chance. It follows therefore that it is not on account of a diversity of matter, as its first cause. Again, those things which result from the intention of an agent, are not on account of matter as their first cause. For an active cause precedes matter in acting, because matter does not become an actual cause except in so far as it is moved by an agent. Wherefore if an effect is consequent upon a disposition of matter and the intention of an agent, it does not result from matter as its first cause. For this reason we find that those things which are referable to matter as their first cause, are beside the intention of the agent, for instance monsters and other mischances of nature, but the form results from the intention of the agent. This is proved thus: the agent produces its like according to its form, and if sometimes this fails, it is from chance on account of a defect in the matter. Therefore forms do not result from a disposition of matter as their first cause; on the contrary, matters are disposed in such a way that such may be their forms. Now the specific distinction of things is according to their forms. Therefore the distinction of things is not on account of the diversity of matter as its first cause. Moreover, the distinction of things cannot result from matter except in those which are made from pre-existing matter. Now many things are distinguished from one another which cannot be made from pre-existing matter. For instance, the celestial bodies, which have no contrary, as their movement shows. Therefore the diversity of matter cannot be the first cause of the distinction of things. Again, whatever things having a cause of their being are distinct from one another, have a cause of their distinction, because a thing is made a being according as it is made one, undivided in itself and distinct from others. Now if matter, by its diversity, is the cause of the distinction of things, we must suppose that matters are in themselves distinct. Moreover, it is evident that every matter has being from something else, since it was proved above, that everything, that is in any way whatsoever, is from God. Therefore something else is the cause of distinction in matters, and consequently the first cause of the distinction of things cannot be a diversity of matter. Again, since every intellect acts for the sake of good, it does not produce a better thing for the sake of an inferior thing, and it is the same with nature. Now all things proceed from God, who acts by his intellect, as stated above. Therefore inferior things proceed from God for the sake of better things, and not vice versa. But form is more noble than matter, since it is its perfection and act. Therefore he does not produce such and such forms for the sake of such and such matters, but rather he produced such and such matters that there might be such and such forms. Therefore the specific distinction in things, which is according to their form, is not on account of their matter, but on the contrary matters were created diverse, that they might be suitable for diverse forms. Hereby is excluded the opinion of Anaxagoras, who postulated an infinite number of material principles, which at first were mixed together in one confused mass, but which an intellect subsequently separated, thus establishing a distinction among things, as well as the opinions of any who held the distinction of things to be the result of various material principles. Chapter 41. That the distinction of things is not on account of a contrariety of agents. From the above we may also prove that the cause of distinction among things is not the diversity or even a contrariety of agents, for if the diverse agents who caused the diversity among things are ordered to one another, there must be some cause of this order, since many are not united together save by some one, and thus the principle of this order will be the first and sole cause of the distinction of things. If, on the other hand, these various agents are not ordered to one another, their convergence to the effect of producing the diversity of things will be accidental, wherefore the distinction of things will be by chance, the contrary of which has been proved above. Again, ordered effects do not proceed from diverse causes having no order, except perhaps accidentally, for diverse things as such do not produce one. Now things mutually distinct are found to have a mutual order, and this not by chance, since for the most part one is helped by another. Wherefore it is impossible that the distinction among things thus ordered be on account of a diversity of agents without order. Moreover, things that have a cause of their distinction cannot be the first cause of the distinction of things. Now, if we take several company ordinate agents, they must needs have a cause of their distinction because they have a cause of their being, since all beings are from one first being, as was shown above, and the cause of a thing's being is the same as the cause of its distinction from others, as we have proved. Therefore diversity of agents cannot be the first cause of distinction among things. Again, if the diversity of things comes of the diversity or contrariety of various agents, this would seem especially to apply, as many maintain, to the contrariety of good and evil, so that all good things proceed from a good principle, and evil things from an evil principle, for good and evil are in every genus. But there cannot be one first principle of all evil things, for, since those things that are through another are reduced to those that are of themselves, it would follow that the first active cause of evils is evil of itself. Now a thing is said to be such of itself, if it is such by its essence. Therefore its essence will not be good. But this is impossible, for everything that is, must of necessity be good in so far as it is a being, because everything loves its being and desires it to be preserved, a sign of which is that everything resists its own corruption, and good is what all desire. Therefore distinction among things cannot proceed from two contrary principles, the one good, and the other evil. Further, every agent acts inasmuch as it is actual, and inasmuch as it is in act. Everything is perfect, and everything that is perfect, as such, is said to be good. Therefore every agent, as such, is good. Wherefore if a thing is essentially evil, it cannot be an agent. But if it is the first principle of evils, it must be essentially evil, as we have proved. Therefore it is impossible that the distinction among things proceed from two principles, good and evil. Moreover, if every being, as such, is good, it follows that evil, as such, is a non-being. Now, no efficient cause can be assigned to non-being, as such, since every agent acts for as much as it is an actual being, and every agent produces its like. Therefore no per se efficient cause can be assigned to evil, as such. Therefore evils cannot be reduced to one first cause that is of itself the cause of all evils. Further, that which results beside the intention of the agent has no per se cause, but befalls accidentally. For instance, when a man finds a treasure while digging to plant. Now evil cannot result in an effect except beside the intention of the agent, for every agent intends a good, since the good is what all desire. Therefore evil has not a per se cause, but befalls accidentally in the effects of causes. Therefore we cannot assign one first principle to all evils. Further, contrary agents have contrary actions. Therefore we must not assign contrary principles to things that result from one action. Now good and evil are produced by the same action. Thus by the same action water is corrupted and air generated. Therefore the difference of good and evil that we find in things is no reason for affirming contrary principles. Moreover, that which altogether is not, is neither good nor evil. Now that which is, for as much as it is good, As proved above, therefore a thing is evil for as much as it is a non-being. But this is a being with a privation. Wherefore evil as such is a being with a privation, and the evil itself is this very privation. Now privation has no per se efficient cause, since every agent acts in as much as it has a form. Wherefore the per se effect of an agent must be something having that form, because an agent produces its like, except accidentally. It follows, then, that evil has no per se efficient cause, but befalls accidentally in the effects of causes which are effective per se. Consequently there is not one per se principle of evil, but the first principle of all things is one first good, in whose effects evil is an accidental consequence. Hence it is said, I am the Lord and there is none other God, I form the light and create darkness, I make peace and create evil. I am the Lord that do all these things, and good things and evil, life and death, poverty and riches, I from God, and good is set against evil. So also is the sinner against a just man. And so look upon all the works of the Most High, 2 and 2, and one against another. God is said to make or create evils, insofar as he creates things that are good in themselves, and yet hurtful to others. For instance, the wolf, although in his species he is a good of nature, is nevertheless evil to the sheep, and likewise fire to water, inasmuch as it is corruptive thereof. In like manner he causes in men those evils which are called venial. Wherefore it is said, shall there be evil in a city, which the Lord hath not done? In this sense Gregory says, even evils, which have no natural subsistence of their own, are created by the Lord. But he is said to create evils when he employs creatures that are good in themselves to punish us who do evil. Hereby is excluded the error of those who asserted contrary first principles. This error began with Empedocles, for he held that there are two first active principles, attraction and repulsion, of which he asserted that attraction is the cause of generation, and repulsion the cause of corruption. Wherefore it would seem as Aristotle says, 1 Metaphysics, that he was the first to assert to contrary principles, good and evil. Pythagoras asserted to primaries, good and evil, as formal however and not as active principles. For he stated that these two are the genera under which all other things are comprised, as the philosopher declares. Now, though these errors of the earlier philosophers were refuted by those of later times, certain men of perverted sense have presumed to combine them with Christian doctrine. The first of these was Marcius, whom the Marcians take their name, who under the guise of a Christian founded a heresy, holding the existence of two contrary principles. He was followed by the Sirdonians, afterwards by the Marcionists, and lastly by the Manichees, who especially spread this error abroad.